Welcome back to the John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS. KNSS is always here for you. Let's keep it that way. Tell your legislators to keep AM radio in vehicles now. Text AM to 52886 and tell Congress to keep AM radio in cars. And make sure you like and follow the John Whitmer Show Facebook page and follow me on X at John R. Whitmer to get all the latest updates on the show. Well, Kansas Attorney General Chris Kobach is asking the U.S. Department of Education's Office for Civil Rights to investigate four Kansas school districts for suspected failure to comply with the Family Educational Rights and Privacy Act. In a letter to the Secretary of Education, Kobach wrote that Kansas City USD 500, Olathe USD 223, Shawnee Mission 512, and Topeka 501 have policies that allow or require teachers to conceal from parents information concerning the social transitioning of their children. Unbelievable. You'd think this was California. With us now to explain exactly what's going on is our Attorney General, Chris Kobach. General, thank you for joining us. It's always a pleasure to have you on the show, my friend.
Great to be with you, John. Yeah, it's amazing that we have four of the largest high schools in Kansas with official policies that require the teachers to conceal from parents or allow them to conceal. In some cases, they're required. In some cases, they're allowed to conceal from parents. The transitioning of their children, of the children. And, you know, this is the ultimate example of schools trying to place themselves in the shoes of a parent and, you know, do a better job of parenting than we parents actually do in their eyes. And it's just absolutely astonishing to me that we have this problem in Kansas.
I don't understand how, first off, I don't understand how it's legal for these districts to conceal this from parents, but More than that, I just think that this is, I saw their responses. You know, one of the districts kind of blew you off. Another one was just flippantly, frankly, insulting in their response to you. How are these districts responding to this?
Well, it varies. Now, this follows from a letter that I sent to six school districts about a year and a half ago, and two school districts, as soon as we informed them that they had these policies, because remember, sometimes a superintendent or a faculty will adopt a policy and the school board doesn't even know about it. Anyway, two of them said, oh, really? Okay, we'll change it immediately. But these last four have said, no, we're going to keep our policies, even though we informed them that it violates a federal statute and it violates the parents' constitutional right to control the upbringing of their children. And this has been recognized by the U.S. Supreme Court since 1925, and it was just re-recognized in an opinion about 3 weeks ago, coming out of Texas, a U.S. Supreme Court opinion, that parents do, in fact, have the right to control the upbringing of their children, especially anything that touches upon faith values and other values like those that are derived from faith. And certainly the whole trans issue touches upon that. So there is a constitutional right these schools are infringing upon, these districts are infringing upon, and there is a federal statutory right they are violating as well. And we are informing them that, hey, they need to change these policies. But amazingly, these four districts seem to be saying, no, we're not going to do that. And so, you know, really, it's down to parents and putting political pressure on them, if not the U.S. Department of Education, which, again, we have contacted the U.S. Department of Education saying, you know, look, this is what these districts are doing. We've advised them they're breaking the law and violating constitutional rights to parents. And, you know, the U.S. Department of Education may use whatever funding levers they have to, you know, nudge the school districts back into compliance with the Constitution.
And I'm assuming that's what you're hoping will then happen, is that the Department of Education will say, okay, comply, or we'll cut off the purse strings, correct?
Yeah, and I think that would be the easiest way to bring the recalcitrant school districts into line. But it's amazing that we even have to fight.
Right, I was just going to say that. It's sad that you have to go that far.
Yes, yes. It's just nonsensical, especially here in Kansas, where we have so much going right. And let's not, you know, overstate it. These are only four very large school districts, but only four school districts. There are hundreds of school districts that are doing things just right and not infringing upon the rights of the parents like this.
And is it any surprise, though, where they are? Topeka,
no.
Kansas City, Topeka, or excuse me, Kansas City. I mean, it's
and Topeka. Yeah. No, it's not really surprising, unfortunately.
we're talking with Attorney General Chris Kobach. I wanted to ask you about it. It's not related necessarily to you. I mean, well, I guess it is because of the cases that you handle, but we've seen so many, and you've handled, you know, cases at the district court level and at the Supreme Court level. You've argued in multiple cases before the Supreme Court. But I want to ask you about what we've seen lately with these activist district court judges and their nationwide injunctions. Did you ever think that it would get so bad that we would have so many of these activist judges putting out these nationwide injunctions? It's gotten obscene under this president.
Yeah, I saw this coming because we started to see nationwide injunctions, way back during the very early years. Even before the Trump administration, the first one is probably in the 1980s. The Supreme Court talks about this in their recent opinion, but they were very few and far between. Where a district court, so you're talking about a federal district court for one state or a portion of one state, says we are striking down this federal statute, federal regulation, or federal policy for the whole country, even though the judge only has jurisdiction in that one state. And so the idea that you could use these really gained traction on the left, and there are a number of district judges who are way on the left side of the spectrum. Now, to be fair, there are some district judges who are very conservative and, you know, I think hold the appropriate view of the Constitution, which is the originalist view that you interpret it according to the intentions and the view of the words that was used by the people who wrote the words. But at any rate, the judge shopping by the left allowed them to go to judges in San Francisco, in New York, and in Hawaii, those being the three biggest targets of the left, find a judge, go to a district where all of the judges are hard left, and then ask for a nationwide injunction. So this one, left-leaning progressive judge who's an activist, meaning outside of his judicial role, he'd like to legislate for the whole country, he renders a decision and shuts down an entire policy. And they really aggressively went after the first Trump administration seeking nationwide injunctions, and now they're doing it against the second Trump administration. And so it's great that the Supreme Court has stepped in, but I don't think we're completely out of the woods yet on this, because we just saw another left-leaning judge issue another nationwide injunction just a few days after the Supreme Court said no more of these nationwide injunctions.
Yeah, I was wondering about that, because the Supreme Court made their ruling and yet another one just did it. So clearly they're going to have eventually the court's going to have to rule again and be a little more clear with their intent, despite what Ketanji Brown Jackson seems to think.
Well, and I think this shows how important it is in our federalist model of judicial selection to really screen these judges carefully.
Yeah.
I mean, there are so many former ACLU activist attorneys who are now sitting on the bench in district courts all across the country, including one that I argued opposite in defending our Kansas law on election security a few years ago. He's now a sitting judge in the Southern District of New York. They constantly, the Democrats in Congress and in the White House are very good at identifying these hyper lefty lawyers and then elevating them to the federal bench.
I wanted to ask you real quick, and I know we've got to let you run. Your office recently had a big win in a case involving the new Kansas law banning foreign money for campaigns. You talked about it yesterday at the KSRA annual meeting. Can you kind of give us a little insight into that before you run?
Yeah, the Kansas legislature this past year passed a great statute that says when you have referendum campaigns on our, in Kansas, in order to amend the Constitution, you have to have a referendum after the legislature passes the amendment by a 2/3 majority. And the legislature said no foreign money. You can't, if you are going to spend money to advocate for one side or the other in a Kansas constitutional referendum, and we have a big one coming up, as I say, in August of next year on judicial selection, you can't take foreign money and spend foreign money, buying TV and radio ads in Kansas. And it's perfectly legal for the state legislature to do so. And we defended that law, and we just won against the plaintiffs who are claiming that law violates their rights. It's the very essence of self-determination. We in America get to decide our own government for ourselves. And someone from another country cannot come in and spend millions of dollars trying to change what we in Kansas decide we the people want in our Constitution. And the legislature passed a very good statute, and we had success in defending it. So this it was a good week.
This was particularly egregious during Value Them Both, wasn't it? There was some, like, wasn't there like hundreds of millions of dollars, a massive chunk of money that came in from overseas in that campaign?
Hundreds of thousands. I don't think
hundreds of thousands. Hundreds of millions. That's right. Yeah.
But yes, there did appear to be a substantial amount of foreign money being spent in that campaign. But you know, it doesn't matter. Maybe it's even if it had never happened before.
Right. Yeah. Good point.
We should have every right to say, look, it's only U.S. money, we're not even limiting it to money, you know, to money inside of Kansas. But you just got to be an American citizen if you're going to fund a campaign in the state of Kansas regarding our constitutional amendments.
No, that's a good point. Yeah, and you're right. I don't have a problem if someone, I mean, I don't like the idea that Hollywood liberals have been, because they did that too during Value Them Both, but at least they're Americans. Yes. So
absolutely.
General,
can I share?
Yes, please.
Before I go, can I share some good news?
Please.
Yeah, the good news, which my dogs are barking about too, is that we just had our crime statistics for calendar year 2024 come out. And Kansans will be happy to know that we are the safest in the past 20 years. We have the lowest crime rate in 20 years, 23 offenses per 1,000 people. And that's down from 27. Really, really low crime in Kansas. And it's been dropping for the last few years. 26% decrease in murders, 13% decrease in property crimes. So great news in the state of Kansas. We are doing some things right. And I'm particularly pleased as Kansas chief law enforcement officer to report that things are going so well.
Well, and I think that's in large part to, you know, the folks that we have on the ground, the law enforcement, you know, our county sheriffs, our PDs, our police, and you and Tony Mativi and some of the folks that we have at the state level as well. So thank you.
That's right. And I certainly can't take all the credit. The credit really is due, I think, first and foremost to the local, the sheriffs and the deputies who are out there making arrests and enforcing the law. But there's no question that at KBI, you know, the direction comes from the top, and our efforts to crack down on fentanyl and other crimes have had an effect, too. So it's a shared triumph for law enforcement across Kansas and for the people of Kansas generally, because, you know, crime rates also are part of our social culture. And we have a no tolerance for crime attitude in Kansas, and I think that's a great thing.
Well, and think, you know, it wasn't too long ago that you and I were on this show talking about retail theft, and look how that number has dropped, for example.
Exactly. Yeah, that too. The legislature gave my office authority to prosecute organized retail crime. We started doing so, and organized retail crime has come down. So all kinds of crimes are dropping in Kansas, and we're at the lowest crime rate we've seen in the past 20 years. So that's good news. And we should all feel a little safer when we walk around in Kansas, that knowing that we are a very safe state to live in.
General, if folks want to connect with you, what's the best way for them to do that?
If they want to connect on, you know, any political matters, my campaign for reelection is chriskobach.com, chriskobach.com. If they want to just, you know, check into the office and see any of our press releases, any of the court cases that we're reporting to the public, the results, that's ag.ks.gov. Again, AG for Attorney General, .ks.gov. And also, if you go to that second, if you have any experience being ripped off, there's a lot of fraudsters right now trying to text you fraudulent messages. And one of the big ones that's going around right now is claiming that you owe money and that you might be arrested, or that you have taken too long to pay some sort of fine.
I've seen that. I got that text, actually.
Yes. They're going around all over the place. If you think you've been defrauded, go to that website, ag.ks.gov. We've got a great consumer protection division that can give you guidance. And if you've lost some money, I may actually be able to help you recover it, depending on the circumstances. So want to make sure people know about that. Great, great resource for Kansans to have.
General, thank you again. Please give my regards to your lovely wife and your daughters.
Will do. Good speaking with you, John.
Thank you, General. We'll take a quick break, and then I want to hear what you think. What do you think about the Judicial Selection Amendment coming up next August? You're listening, not this August, next August. You're listening to the John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS, Wichita's number one talk. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS, Wichita's number one talk. Don't forget about this Saturday. It's the AFP Day of Action. It's a great way to get engaged, make a difference, way for you to change the trajectory of Wichita and Sedgwick County. It's your way to make your voice heard today. Visit AmericansForProsperity.org and sign up. It's a great way to volunteer, get a little exercise. They'll feed you, get a cool T-shirt, and help educate voters about the issues that matter. You can, while you're online, of course, make sure you like and follow the John Whitmer Show Facebook page and follow us on X at John R. Whitmer to get all the latest updates on the show. That's coming up on Saturday. Also, don't forget, Thursday is the monthly meeting of the Sedgwick County Republican Party. That's at 6:30 at the Wichita Area Builders Association. Phil, I understand we had someone who messaged us on Facebook with a question. Is that right?
They had a question, and this was concerning your interview with Diane a little bit earlier, concerning pay for
school board members.
School board members.
Uh-huh.
He didn't want to be on the air, but he wanted to ask that question
about
and kind of get your answer.
The context. So, gotcha. So they're not paid now. What happened is, you remember how the legislature set up that BRAC commission in order to pay state legislators. And now they raised the pay for state legislators. Mm-hmm. When they did that, they created right now, school board members are not paid. They have not been paid. And in the United States, school board members are often not paid. And in fact, in some states, it's actually illegal to compensate school board members. And I will be the first to tell you, it's a thankless job. I would not take a school board gig if you paid me.
I used to do the school board meeting reporting for KNSS.
Yeah.
And I will tell you that that's 2 or 3 hours of my life Monday that I would not get back.
I wouldn't either.
It's a thankless gig. I see it from the seats out there.
Yeah. It's a thankless gig.
Yes.
I agree. So the legislature, when they did that whole pay bill, they added a provision within the statute that gave every district across the state the ability, should the district vote to do so, they could build in a compensation package to pay board members. So each district now, if they want to, the district board could vote to give themselves pay. So the board members would have to vote for their own pay raise. Mm-hmm. So right there, it's problematic. So they're going to have to vote to give themselves pay, which no elected official ever wants to vote for a pay for themselves, let alone in this case where it's not only voting for a pay raise, you're literally voting to give yourself a salary when you didn't get one at all for a part-time gig, mind you. Okay, so let's start there. But this is a growing trend to consider compensating, particularly in the larger districts. The argument is that it would attract a more diverse pool of candidates. It would alleviate, you know, the financial burdens. It would compensate them for their time, yada, yada, yada. That's the argument. Okay. Here's my issue with it. What did Diane talk about? They're financially constrained. They got money problems. They got buildings that they can't. I mean, everything you always hear, the superintendent out of Goddard, who told me to my face, it'll never be enough money. What's our school funding formula song? What's the song that I always play whenever we talk about school districts? There you go. That's it. It's never enough money. So every district will tell you it's never enough money. Okay. So if it's never enough money, how can you possibly justify taking taxpayer money out of the mouths of babes, or in this case, out of the classroom, to pay your board of your school board? Mm-hmm. And that's my argument. I know that they need it, or they don't need it. They don't need it, but they deserve it. Let's say I don't know that. I would say that this is the job you asked for. This is the job you wanted. You knew when you ran for it that it was an unpaid job. It's tough. It's thankless. You get the crap beat out of you. I'm sorry. That's the job you ran for. Now you want pay? Sorry. If you don't like it, don't run for re-election. Mm-hmm. But if it's that hard, then don't run for re-election. But if your district is that desperate for money, you're going to take taxpayer dollars out of the classroom to pay. Now, in this case, how many school board members are there? What? Seven, I believe?
Seven, yes.
Okay, so let's say, what are we going to pay him? We're not going to do the median family income in Kansas, which is about $70,000, but let's say we pay him, let's say we give him $35,000. Let's just assume we give him $35,000. That's $245,000. Now, are we going to give him benefits? Do they get bennies? Do they get health insurance on top of that? But if you give them that, that's even more. Mm-hmm. But at minimum, you're probably talking $250,000 a year. Okay. And now if they're an employee, here's another one. If you're an employee, you now get capers. Oh. Now you qualify for retirement.
Oh, don't get me started on capers. Right. I heard all about this during the
2008. Now that you're technically an employee, you qualify for capers. You qualify for retirement, which in Kansas is a public benefit. It's not 401k. You're a full out. So I'm sorry. Again, you knew what you were getting when you ran for school board. It's a non-paid gig. So you're going to take a half or a quarter of $1 million out of the classroom to pay a school board member, or in this case, the whole board. Mm-hmm. And that's just, let's say we did 35. Johnson County, they're probably going to pay him $75,000 a year.
It's going to be more.
Right. So how many paraeducators could I pay for $250,000 a year? How many teachers could I hire for $250,000 a year? How many, administrators could I fire and pay for $250,000 a year? How many educators, how much money could I put in the classroom? Instead, I'm going to pay my school board member. I'm sorry. I would never approve forcing somebody's property taxes to go up so that I could pay a school board member. Mm-hmm. So, whoever that was who sent the message.
There you go.
There's your answer. And I'll get off my soapbox. We'll take a quick break, and then Dave Traubert from the Kansas Policy Institute will share with us a staggering new report that exposes how the Kansas State Department of Education denies lowering standards despite implausible proficiency gains. 316-869-1330. You're listening to the John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS, Wichita's number one talk. Good song, Phil. I like this one. Welcome back to the John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS, Wichita's number one talk. Want to remind you to stay informed with up-to-the-minute news by downloading the Odyssey app or telling Alexa or Google Home to play KNSS Radio. And, of course, make sure you like and follow the John Whitmer Show Facebook page and follow me on X at John R. Whitmer. Well, as I mentioned last hour, according to the Kansas Department of Education, 2025 state assessment results are using a new test and cut scores to determine achievement levels. For example, the percentage of eighth graders reading at proficiency level has more than doubled, jumping from 22% last year to 46%. This year, which has prompted many to question if the department is dumbing down the standards. That or just kids are just a whole heck of a lot smarter in order to achieve the better results. With us now to share an analysis of these results is Dave Traubert from the Kansas Policy Institute. Well, Dave, are they dumbing down the standards, or did all the kids just take their smart pills this year?
Well, good evening, John. Thanks for having me here. I guess it's somewhat reminiscent of about a year ago when we saw tens of thousands of people streaming across the southern border, and the Biden administration is saying, "Oh no, the border is secure. Ignore what you're seeing." I mean, this is just absurd. Of course, there was not that magic turnaround. I mean, this is a trend that had been sliding down. In 2015, that number was 29% proficient. It was down to 22, and now it's 46. Shazam!
Well, maybe Edward James Olmos was teaching the class. I mean, all across the state, he was running around. You know, I mean, I read your article, and you had a great sentence in the article. Said the only plausible explanation was that it was either the new test is easier, standards are lower, or some combination of the two. And that does make sense to me.
Well, sure. I mean, it is a new test, and they did admit that it's a much shorter test. We don't know if it's also an easier test, but we do know that, I mean, basically came out and said they reduced standards, and then they said, but we didn't reduce standards. So here's the explanation. So let me start by saying you mentioned they set new cut scores. Think of setting the grade level on a test where you might say 90 to 100 is an A. Well, with this new test, they brought in 140 teachers and they showed them the results and they said, now, where do you think the cutoffs would be for proficient or basic and so forth? And it's kind of like they said, well, let's make 70 to 100 an A.
Okay. I mean,
because here's the explanation. They said, now, last year, prior years, there were kids scoring in level two basic, and teachers knew that that wasn't right, that they really were proficient based on what they were seeing. And so they said that was a misaligned system. Well, okay, so you said last year the standard was too high. We get that. And so now you've reduced it. Oh, no, that's not what we said. Well, yes, it is what you said. Just be honest and say you reduced the performance standard for what it takes to be proficient.
So what, Dave, I got to ask, what are, I mean, the disconnect here, and I've had this conversation with multiple educators and the folks who are saying that we're being mean, the folks who accuse you of saying that you hate kids or you hate teachers. And I push back on that immediately. And so I say, no, I hate mediocrity, but you know, they immediately say that the other counterpunch that they use is graduation rates. Oh, but the graduation rates, I mean, Kelly Bielfeld, I interviewed him a while back, and he said, our graduation rates are 84%. And of course, I immediately said, yeah, but if you're graduating kids that can't read and write, what does it matter? What are college admission folks saying about these kids?
Employers are saying they cannot hire a lot of these kids right out of high school, because they don't have the basic math and reading skills. College professors are saying 40 to 60% of kids, depending upon whether it's the community college or the four-year whatever, need remedial training. They have to take makeup courses to learn what they didn't get in high school before they can start taking real college courses. They have to pay for those, and they don't count toward graduation. Everybody knows that outcomes are insufficient. You look at the college readiness in English, reading, math, and science. In 2015, it was 32%. Not good at all. Now it's 18%. But don't believe your lying eyes. Things aren't going down. They say, well, it's not accurate. You know, researchers will look for confirmation. They'll look to other data sets. They'll repeat tests and see if there's outliers to test assumptions. Well, when you see outcomes declining on the ACT and you see outcomes declining on the National Assessment of Educational Progress, and they had been declining on the state assessment, to see a hockey stick jump up now is just not believable. And yet they say that, no, this is comparable. This is comparable. That's whenever in history there has been a new state assessment come out, they have been very specific in saying you may not compare one test to another. Doesn't work. It's a different test. It's different standards. That applies now. They say that those are the cases now. But now all of a sudden you can compare one to the next. It's just not believable.
We're talking with Dave Traubert from the Kansas Policy Institute. Another story that I've seen, it's the media is not really given a whole lot of cover, but it's this story that's been kind of sneaking out lately, and it's about how students are taking multiple catch-up classes or credits or doing little papers in order to make up the necessary requirements to graduate, But even teachers are starting to say, well, you know, just because you turn in a paper or you take this little pop-up quiz or you go do an online thing doesn't necessarily mean that you've fulfilled the requirements, but you did it, so we're going to graduate you. Are you familiar with this story, Dave?
Yeah, of course. I mean, whether you call it grade inflation.
Yeah, grade inflation, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there's a number of things. It's just not, and again, it doesn't comport. You're seeing college readiness decline, and you're seeing graduation rates increase. What's wrong with that picture?
And why are districts doing this? Is it basically because they just want that graduation rate up, so they're trying to make it easier so the kid can graduate? I mean, what's the incentive to the district for this, as opposed to actually having a kid who is ready for life?
Well, it's a number of things, John. I mean, this is just my educated opinion, of course. But education administrators, local school boards, state school board, they all want kids to do better. They really do.
Yeah.
But for a lot of them, they draw the line at having to change their behaviors in order to make that happen. That's not going to go. We are not going to change what we're doing. And now you think about it, for years, for decades, you've had a lot of administrators saying things are fine. You've had the KASB saying Kansas is in the top 10 of all the states. Never was true. They didn't care. They got media to print it. So everybody is thinking things are well. Now, how, if you've been pushing that story for decades, how do you turn around and say, yeah, well, they really aren't? It puts them in a pickle. And now think about this also. You're talking about administrators who started out as teachers, and then they became principals, and then some other administrator, and now they're superintendents. Nowhere along the way were they ever trained in how to run a results-oriented, accountable organization. It's not their fault. They don't have that skill set. And then when they're looking upstream and they see the Department of Education making things up and they see the legislature not willing to take action, even when audits say, for example, they're not spending this $500 million according to state law, nobody does anything and everybody else is making excuses. I don't know where to start. So what do? I kind of go along with it. It's not their fault. We need to take the attitude that, look, we are where we are, and no one's to blame for where we are, but we're all responsible for moving forward.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we'll see. I mean, I know that there's a new funding formula interim committee that's working. It'll be very interesting to see what they come up with. If folks want to connect with you guys, you do some wonderful reporting, some investigative journalism, something the media doesn't do anymore, certainly not the Wichita Eagle. They can find some great articles of yours. It's at sentinelksmo.org, correct?
Yes, and at kansaspolicy.org.
Dave, I appreciate you as always. It's always a pleasure having you on the show, my friend.
Thanks for having us, John.
We'll take a quick break, and then I want to hear from you. We'll hear what do you think? I mean, are we getting our bang for our bucks out of the K-12 education system? Maybe I'm just being too harsh. Maybe that's it. It's possible. Lord knows. I've been called that. Our studio lines are open, 316-869-1330. You're listening to the John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS, Wichita's number one talk. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS, Wichita's number one talk. Don't forget, this Saturday is AFP's Day of Action. If you want to get engaged, make a difference, visit AmericansForProsperity.org. It's a great way to get involved. We got a couple of callers. Very interested in talking to my first caller, Richard, who's a substitute teacher here in Wichita. Would love to hear your takes, particularly, and we're going to have a couple of school board candidates on next Sunday as well. So, Richard, thank you for joining us.
You're welcome. I was stunned when I found out that we're actually admitting that we're going back to phonics, because when you substitute for an elementary teacher and it comes to the reading or the intermediate reading, which is otherwise known as remedial. We just changed the word because we don't want to offend the students or, you know, give them a complex.
Right.
And you ask one of the other teachers, you go, okay, so we're going back to phonics. Oh, no, no, not really. Well, we're teaching them sound. Change this sound and it changes that word. Isn't that phonics? No, not really. Yet your school board member said that's exactly what it is.
Yep. Well, she's the head of the school board, so she would know.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Small problem when you do that. I would look at it. It would tell me to tell them to change the sound, and they did. And it became a new word. The only problem was the two letters in the middle we were changing did not spell the new word correctly. It sounded the same, you know, so they'll be able to say it. They just won't be able to recognize it when they see it or write it if they want to. But other than that, no real challenge there. Yeah. We also had, I was in one of the middle schools. It still remained nameless. And the entire class, all 8 hours, all day long, was eighth grade, essentially remedial math. I can't remember the actual word for it, but it's remedial math. All of those students also had a regular math class. I actually ran the numbers off of the attendance sheet. 80% of the eighth graders were enrolled in that class.
Mm.
80. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, how is that possible? How do you have 80% of the students in a class in remedial?
Well, they didn't perform well enough in their seventh grade math class, and we got to get them ready to go to high school. But, with the misinterpretation of No Child Left Behind, they're going to go anyway.
Do we not hold kids back anymore?
Oh, God, no. Oh, Lord, no.
See, that's part of our problem. I mean, I'm not that old. I mean, I'm in my 50s. But back when I was in school, if you didn't pass, yeah, they held you back.
I got a better one for you. Okay? Got a class of eighth graders. Okay? That school still remain, and subjects still remain anonymous as well. But I had five of them. Count, five of them. That not only had a solid F in the class I was substituting for, but because progress reports had to be done during that particular, you know, had just been done, I could see what, you know, it was still in the system for me to look at. Not only did they have a solid F in the class I was substituting for, they had a solid F. And I'm not talking about a few more points would have got them to a D. I'm talking flat, solid, zero F in every one of their eight classes. All five of them will go to high school next year.
And see, here's the other question. How come we're not firing teachers? I mean, don't get me wrong. My mother was a teacher. My sister's a teacher. I've got a daughter-in-law who's a teacher. I love teachers, but I want teachers who are doing a freaking job. And if they're not, then they need to be able to be released to go be successful elsewhere. And that's another, but that comes down to the unions, in my opinion. But Richard,
ding, 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 ding. Ask your sister and your daughter-in-law if they pay their NEA or AFT dues, how hard it would be to actually fire them.
Exactly. Yep, yep.
But here's the deal. In deference to the teachers, okay, if your kid, as they say, passively fails or quietly fails, as in literally comes into the class, puts their head down on the desk and sleeps entire hour every day of the week that they're in class, and they know that they will go to the next class, how do you motivate that?
That's a good question. Yeah, and at least they were there. So I guess they, you know, they were at least in class. Richard, I appreciate the call, my friend. I know we've got Chris and McPherson on the line. I don't think I'm going to be able to get to you, but if you call next Sunday, I will take your call, my friend. I love McPherson. My wife and I love to come up for the Highland Games because I'm Scottish. I'm a MacLeod, but in the meantime, carry on, fellow deplorables.